No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show, which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Maria Sanchez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the conversation by calling in at 888-627-6008, or you can Skype your questions to BBSRADIO and the number 1. Tonight we have a special guest, Claudia Talese. Claudia is from the Medical Society of Northern Virginia Foundation. She runs it, and she's here to talk about doctors telemed, health information technology, which is all the rage these days, and we're excited to have her with us. Claudia, are you there?
I am here. Hi. Thank you.
Hi.
Nice intro.
Thank you. Thanks for being with us. And this is my co-host, Maria. Maria, why don't you ask the first question?
I will, and thank you, Michael, and welcome to the program, Claudia. Thank you so much for taking the time to help our listeners understand what it is that you're attempting to do. And as Michael and I were talking before the broadcast, there's all kinds of information available on the internet, including my daughter who calls a doctor via the internet to get prescriptions that she's never met, and they don't know her, and she has no problem getting antibiotics and what have you. So why don't you tell us what you're up to and where we're headed?
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be with the two of you. Nice to meet you. And I'll do my best at giving you an overview of what telemedicine is and where we stand. So I will start with my project, and then I will move it out onto the federal landscape. So at the Medical Society of Northern Virginia, we began working with health information technology about 5 years ago, because we've noticed that there was just the beginning of the explosion of this market. Everybody in the world is trying to get into, you know, health information technology, and we've noticed that physicians are being a little bit disenfranchised. So we represent over 1,600 independent physicians in Northern Virginia throughout 4 contiguous counties, Arlington, Fairfax, Loudoun, and Prince William counties. They also happen to be, Fairfax and Loudoun, happen to be the highest income counties in the country. And so we're quite fortunate in this area that we still have a large number of independent physicians who run private practices and via that virtue of small businesses. This is not the case in other parts of the country where bigger health systems are really employing more and more physicians, and companies that are typically were not interested in healthcare sort of jumping into the bandwagon and getting into the market. Why? Because, you know, it is a profitable market. It is a business. And so we thought the best way to make a little dent in all of this explosion is to really have and lend some direction to how these health information technologies are advancing and what they're doing really to our patients. And so we created a health information exchange first that was funded by a private foundation, and that health information exchange basically connects various EMR systems and various labs and labs here in Northern Virginia where physicians are connected. They can share patient information across the community in a safe and secure way. the technology needs to be ONC certified and HIPAA compliant to protect the privacy of the patients, but also to protect the information as it's transmitting from one point to the next. And so that sort of started our interest in health information technology. About 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, we kept getting a lot of calls from our members asking us to review contracts from a lot of telemedicine providers that are actually were recruiting them. And so we had the opportunity to see the business model behind these, what I call capital ventures. And sometimes we, you know, very quickly we realized that the business model was not too favorable to the physician, but it was also somewhat irresponsible to the patient. And so it doesn't surprise me that your daughter doesn't know his or her, her provider, her physician.
Uh-huh.
That may be okay for some instances, but it's not okay for others. The ability to have that information that a provider is giving you when you are experiencing acute care or when you're experiencing the need to have your medication refilled, it's very important to the primary care physician, because the primary care physician ultimately coordinates the health care of, you know, of every individual, and those individuals need to have what is called continuity of care. And so we need to have those dispersed sets of information connected at some point. And so that is why we created Doctors Telemed, with the idea that it's a very responsible business model. We are focusing on creating community-oriented network of physicians. So in other words, when people use Doctors Telemed, it's only people from Northern Virginia and the metro area. And they will get Northern Virginia and metro area physicians. So if they have the need to see that doctor in person, or if that doctor needs to see them in person, there's the peace of mind that can always be an alternative also. In addition to that, Doctors Telemed has a light EMR system built into our platform, which gives the patient and the doctor the ability to share that information in a very secure way with other providers. And so in that sense, it's a very responsible technology.
Now, Claudia, you tell me, do I interface with a doctor when I'm on Doctors Telemed? If I use the service, am I actually talking to a doctor?
Yes, and so that is the other side of the responsible business model that I was referring to, is that a lot of these telemedicine solutions that are out there, networks that are big, oftentimes they're not using MDs or DOs. They're using, you know, lower-level practitioners, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, we have a huge amount of respect for nurses. But there is a need for a physician who is a medical doctor or a DO or, you know, that has that kind of training and those degrees to be able to firmly assess a diagnosis.
Yeah, and there's so much information out there. I mean, the internet is a great tool, but I really worry about the information that's out there. I'm a diabetic. I've just gone through an 8.5 month ordeal where I had a blister on my foot that got infected. I ended up in the hospital, ended up on intravenous antibiotics for a very long time, and it's finally healed. And I did get some good information off the internet that helped me, but I was under a doctor's care the whole time. There's all sorts of information out there. It's so hard to even separate it. There's so much of it. So that would really worry me, because, you know, I had a doctor. So what the internet helped me do was come up with questions for my doctor. So I would go into my doctor and I would say, such and such and such and such. And sometimes he would say, yeah, well, that's right. That's a good idea. Maybe we'll talk about that. And other times he'd go, no. That's not it. So yes. You got to have somebody there to say no, right?
Or the doctor. I did that with my, I had traveled to India, and when I came back, I had gastric distress, so I tried the whole foods route for 6 weeks with probiotics and all this. Nothing worked, so my internist is a travel medicine specialist, and he says to me, so we'll just take you just take this pill twice, and that'll be it. And I said, no, you need to take a stool sample. And he goes, you've been on the internet. And I said, yes, and you have to take three, you know, 48 hours apart. He goes, oh, gosh, Maria, please. And then, of course, it turned out that I did have Giardia, and that I took those two pills, and I went away.
Yeah.
Right. So I think that, and that's what I'm referring to, you know, to having a very responsible business model and also a responsible plan of care for anybody who accesses medicine via the internet or really in any other way. You talk a lot about having all this, you know, plethora of information. And I want to talk a little bit about the investment the federal government actually made in telehealth. And that, for the public, the audience that's listening right now or in the future, there are actually, the federal government funds two national resource centers, one that focuses on policy, and that is called the Center for Connected Health Policy. And if you go on that website, you can find up-to-date information on regulation, law, and status of any laws for any state. And they do a very good job at keeping and tracking information and upcoming legislation. The second one is the National Telehealth Technology Assessment Resource Center. And they focus a lot on really quality assurance for the technology and the hardware piece that delivers telehealth services. And then there are also 12 regional resource centers throughout the country, and this area belongs to the Mid-Atlantic Telehealth Resource Center. And those are really good sources of information to learn about telehealth in general and telemedicine, which is one of the branches under telehealth. And
well,
those are very reputable sources.
Well, since we're a show that deals a lot with politics, Claudia, can you tell us what's going on politically with these issues right now? Is there legislation that's being considered that would either in Virginia or at the federal level?
Yeah, so I'm really glad you asked that question, because at the federal level, actually, there's been a big victory last week, where Medicare expanded the reimbursement of telemedicine services through several codes. And so that's a really big plus. Different states have different regulations about how telemedicine, it's defined, for instance, in Virginia, in Maryland, and in D.C., telemedicine is defined as a means the use of electronic technology or media, including interactive audio or video, for the purposes of diagnosing or treating a patient. And so that means that in Virginia, at least, doctors can get reimbursed for a live video consult. So in other words, you have to be able to see your physician on the other side, like FaceTime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that is called parity. We have that here. And
it's called what?
It's called parity law, where there isn't a distinction, you know, between, we call it telemedicine because it is telemedicine, but there isn't a distinction in terms of reimbursement. And that's a good thing, because we need to be able to encourage patients and doctors to use technology, because it is really a service of convenience. And in this area and many other metropolitan areas where we deal with a lot of traffic, sometimes it's really a hassle to get to your doctor. And so it's a really good thing that providers, physicians are able to get reimbursed at the same rate. The other piece is that for those rural areas where there aren't enough specialties, there aren't enough points of services in terms of healthcare, remote care becomes, you know, a really added access through telemedicine. And so there are really good things that can happen through the use of telemedicine.
Well, let me ask you, you say the government has agreed to pay for this. Do private insurers pay for it as well?
Yes, so at least in Virginia and in Maryland, I don't know to a certain to what extent in D.C., but in Virginia and in Maryland, there's legislation and law that states that insurance plans must reimburse at the same rate as in person.
Right. So that seems like a win-win-win because the physician has to give up real time, but doesn't have to. It's probably easier to see patients back to back to back instead of the chit chat that goes on in general, and then the patient doesn't have to drive there.
Yes, so it has a lot of, you know, it has a lot of benefits. The technology piece, the time. It's really good for male patients. Male patients have a really hard time walking through a doctor's office. Having the ability to, and the peace of mind of having that one-on-one, you know, from the comfort of their home, increases their utility of and
healthcare.
Did we lose her? Claudia, are you still there?
No. I'm here.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Okay. No, that's okay. Yeah, we can hear you fine.
Okay. Where did I cut off?
Well, you know, you said something about men having a hard time walking through doctor's office. That really intrigues me. What is that about?
It's true. Actually, there's several studies, and this is nothing to do with telemedicine, but telemedicine is actually a win for them. Men just don't like to go to the doctor. They just don't.
And they wait for the women to nag or make the appointments.
Or they wait until the last minute.
Oh, my God, my wife is right. She's nagging all the time. It's just funny. It just struck me funny that you said that, Claudia, because that's me. I'm like, I don't have to go to the doctor.
Yeah, and that's the thus the infection.
Yeah. So, that's great. And I'm old enough now. You and Maria are not nearly old enough to remember this, but I am, to remember when doctors used to come to your home. You didn't go to the doctor's office. They came to your house.
Yes, well, exactly. So imagine, I mean, he could be in your house, the doctor, she could be in your house virtually.
Right.
Yeah. And then that's a peace of mind for a lot of patients. The other specialty that has gotten always a lot of traction with telemedicine is mental health.
I was just going to bring that up. Because you can get also text messages for psychotherapy.
You can for some services, although that's not best practice.
No,
it's not best practice. psychiatrists, at least we have a couple of psychiatrists, they always like to see the patient, and they always like to have that one-on-one interaction. And they would prefer that in-person interaction because there's a lot of body language that psychiatrists read on their patients. But they'll take the live consults, you know, as opposed to none.
Well, I can see if somebody suffers from agoraphobia or social anxiety and they're homebound, that maybe that would be a good way for them to get into the practice. So it's not as threatening, and then maybe they could work up to going into the appointments.
Yes, the other cool thing that we can do with technology is that, for instance, our platform has geospatial location embedded into the system. So the doctor knows where the patient is, you know, is requesting the consult from. And so if there's a need for intervention, the psychiatrist would know on the other side how to mobilize the authorities or maybe, you know, a friend or even a family member.
Uh-huh. Isn't that something?
Yes. So
because if someone's going to be harm themselves or others, right, that's mandated reporting.
I have to share with you that someone just texted in a comment. Men are babies. I assume that was a young lady or a lady that sent that in, but I had to share that with you. So how does this whole thing work, Claudia? Do I have to be part of a network? Do I have to sign up as a doctor? And how do I access it as a patient?
Yeah, so we definitely have to vet every physician who wants to be part of the network. And so we're very lucky because, you know, we are the medical society, and so we already have a long-standing relationship with a lot of great doctors in our community. But for those doctors who are not directly, you know, associated with MSNVA, we make sure that their license is in good standing. There's a process. We make sure that, you know, they have insurance. We make sure that they're able to practice in the state where they stay there. You know, they're able to practice. And so on the patient side, patients need to register. There are a set of regulations that we must abide with, and one of those is the consent form. So when patients register, they must agree to consent, and most of the states have that. And the consent basically goes over what telemedicine is. It goes over the limitations of telemedicine, because there are limitations. You know, it's a wonderful technology and it's great, but it's not for everything. And so we need to recognize and disclose that up front.
Do I have to be a Virginia resident to use your service?
No, because we have Washington, D.C. providers, so you don't. Really, patients right now, any patient from the D.C. metro area is able to register. We have providers.
But I couldn't in Los Angeles. I couldn't avail myself of your services. Okay.
You're out of our network for now. Anyway, mm-hmm. We're fairly new. We're the new kid in the block. We created Doctors Telemed last year,
and so oh my goodness,
we're still sort of advancing. But again, it is the only telemedicine solution that is supported by a medical society, and it's been a really great learning experience. And, you know, I talk about being socially responsible all the time because I see a lot of telemedicine solutions out there and business models out there that are not responsible and that will do the patients a disfavor in the end.
Yeah, I mean, I don't go a week where I don't get an email that tells me that there's a doctor, you know, advertising some vitamin or some, quick fix that'll get rid of my diabetes or cure health disease or keep me ever from getting sick again. I mean, I get all this stuff on the internet, and there's really no way to know if any of it's legitimate. To me, most of it sounds like it's not legitimate.
Legitimate as in it does what it purports to do?
Right.
Okay.
Right. That it's not just, I mean, they really sound like snake oil salesmen, you know, like the old guy that used to come along with the elixir, right, that cured mm-hmm. everything from arthritis to herpes. And, you know, I see a lot of that out there, and that scares me.
Yeah, it is scary because, you know, I see the same thing on, you know, the entire healthcare system. All of these companies that never cared to be in the business of healthcare now are in the business of healthcare. You know, you have to really think why.
So, well, because it's big business these days.
Yeah, right. And we worried a lot about the fact that, you know, more and more insurance companies are trying to dictate how doctors are going to practice. That wedge between the patient and the doctor is going bigger and bigger. And we think telemedicine is going to actually give us that momentum where we're going to go back to the patient-physician relationship.
Well, that would be great.
So what do you think was the genesis for starting this, since you're so new? What was broken that you saw that needed to be fixed?
So for us, one was the business model, and two, on the patient, you know, the way that the patients are accessing services and the kind of providers that they're accessing. Number two was the fact that when my members asked me to review contracts from, you know, other telemedicine providers, we realized that those companies were walking away with 80% of the profits. And so our model is very physician-friendly. We only take 10% of any cash revenue, and we give back to the physician 90%. And that 10% basically pays for the technology, for any upgrades, maintenance, and some staff time.
Boy, that sounds like a great return on investment from the physician side.
It is. Yeah, for physicians it is. And I think for patients don't really have to worry about cost because their insurance, most of the time, their insurance plans cover for these services. We were awarded a grant by CareFirst last year in June. And so through that CareFirst, we are able to deliver charity care. And so a lot of our providers who sign up for Doctors Telemed are also doing pro bono visits for certain safety net clinics here in Northern Virginia.
So is that considered pro bono then?
Yeah, well, they don't
the
get
physicians
paid.
Actually get reimbursed, but the patient is in pain.
No, so CareFirst pays $55 per visit. That's what the grant is for. But you know, they only pay for a limited amount. Like we paid for three visits from that grant, but most patients that are seeing a dermatologist who have, you know, chronic conditions, they have to see the doctor on a monthly basis. So the doctor just does it on a pro bono. The doctor doesn't get paid.
So, Claudia, do you know how many states are involved in similar setups? How many states have systems like this? Do you know?
Well, at least there are like three huge national telemedicine providers. One is MWell, Teladoc, and MDLive. And so it's really in every state. A lot of health plans also have their own telemedicine solutions. Like they might have partnered with MWell, or they might have partnered with Teladoc or MDLive. So that's how they provide that service to their subscribers. We're very direct to consumer.
I would think it would be great in areas where you know, in really rural areas. I had a friend, now this was 30 years ago, but I had a friend in Wyoming who had to move when his wife was pregnant because they were 4 hours from the nearest hospital. So they moved in the last month of her pregnancy, so they could be closer to a hospital and rent a house for a month. Yeah. And I'm sure there's still places like that in the United States where it's very, you know, far between hospitals. And I would think that this service would, you know, really behoove people that live in rural areas. If people want more information about you and what you do, Claudia, how do they get that? Do you have a website?
Yeah, so we have a website. It's doctorstelemed.org.
And they can also
reach me via Twitter at C as in cat, T as in Thomas, E L L E Z as in zebra, 1. That's my handle.
All right. Well, everybody's got to have a handle these days.
I know. That's just amazing.
Yeah,
is there really any medicine that you don't cover?
Well, that really is up to the plan, right? So the plan sort of, like I was saying before, dictates what is covered and what's not covered, and that's a shame in itself. But, you know, most people here have health insurance. So it's not the purview of Doctors Telemed. It's really up to the individual's insurance plan.
And so I'm wondering if somebody discovers they need surgery.
then they'll be referred. They'll be referred back to their primary care provider, so they can coordinate. That could be coordinated through the primary care provider.
Okay, and yeah. You're probably not geared towards chronic diseases, though.
So with chronic diseases, we can do monitoring. So there's a lot of, you might have heard a lot about, you know, chronic care management. I'm sure Senator Brown having diabetes, I'm sure that you're always being monitored by your doctor's office or a nurse in your doctor's office that probably calls you once a month. So telemedicine lends itself for doing those calls with the patient on a monthly basis.
Mm-hmm.
But there are, I want to go back to the prescription because there are limitations on what could be prescribed, you know, over the phone or over an online video session. And those antipsychotic drugs are not, you couldn't even do it in person, so you always have to go to the doctor to get it from the doctor.
And what about opioids?
They're the same.
Okay.
Those cannot be prescribed online. Yeah.
Good.
You have to get a medical note from your doctor and walk it through to the pharmacy.
How about medical marijuana?
That's allowable in certain states where it's permissible.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be in D.C., and I think it's also permissible here in Virginia.
But you still have to get it from a dispensary. I mean, it's not like they can't deliver it to you. They can't.
No, no.
Right?
You still have to physically go to the place and get from the.
But with the prescription, so you can have at least in California, you get a medical marijuana card. And then that allows you to go.
You got to love California.
What, is that unusual?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I could see going to the bank and saying, oh, you know, I don't have my driver's license, but I have my medical marijuana.
Yeah. Well, I have a girlfriend who suffers from chronic, an autoimmune disorder and chronic pain and depression and stuff. And she just got hers and they deliver to the house.
Yeah.
She has to pay the cash. The caveat is the cash. She has to pay in cash.
Yeah.
But
she
says they'll come within 20 minutes. And she goes, wait, I got to get to the bank first. You can't come that quickly.
Yeah, you got to pay by cash, Claudia, because there's a federal law that prohibits these guys from having bank accounts. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Oh, wow.
It's
I didn't know that. So what is the law? Oh, wow.
Yeah, so there's, you know, and it's connected to some kind of antiquated anti-trafficking law, you know. But yeah, in most places, at least the little research that I've done, in most places like California and Washington, you have to pay in cash. These guys cannot have bank accounts. It really, really inhibits them, too, from a business standpoint, as you can imagine. So,
how dangerous.
How dangerous.
But also, how is the money tracked? Like, don't they pay tax? Don't they have to pay taxes on any earnings?
Well, that's a good question.
It is.
And I'm sure the federal government must have some way to, you know, to do that because, you know, Uncle Sam hates to give up his tax money, any dollar of it. So I'm sure that's a good question. We'll have to look into that. And, you know, the thing you were saying about my diabetes, the technology is increasing so quickly, too. I could imagine that this will become an even more important tool. Like, for example, I have to test my blood several times a day on a meter that keeps track of it all, which I can actually plug into my computer. So
right, and then gets that info, right? Doctor can get that info.
Yeah, I actually go to the doctor enough that I take my meter in when I go, that sort of thing. But yes, theoretically anyway, I could hook it up to my computer and email it to them. And so as this goes forward, I'm sure the technology on it, like technology in general, will just explode. I mean, I think you're in exactly the right place at the right time. So is there anything you want to add, Claudia? Any question that we forgot to ask?
No, I think we're good. I hope I covered, you know, and I gave you a little bit of a little bit more of information than what you had before. And I am available for any comments, either via Twitter or on the website at drkellnet.org.
And we'll put your stuff up on our website too, and let people. And we'll forward any comments we get. And we hope you'll come back at some point and give us an update, because this is important stuff, and I'm sure it's changing every day. Maria, anything you want to add?
Do you have any sense that there's going to be some, for lack of a better word, copycatters? Since what you're doing seems to work.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are, you know, sort of jumping into the bandwagon of telemedicine. I mean, that is very evident by the fact that, you know, 3 years ago the conference had 100 people. Last year it had over 5,000 people.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
And this year we had over 10,000 people. So, it's very evident. I think that the market is going to consolidate eventually, but I'm very convinced that the business models that are responsible will prevail, because people will see the quality of services that they get and the fact that their information, you know, it's always kept confidential and in their profiles, and that information can be shared with their real primary care physician, if you will.
I love it that you're socially responsible, too.
Thank you.
So it's not just a business, but you have a conscience.
Yes, and I believe that those are the business models that will prevail. They need to prevail. It can't be all about
again,
the money.
It's a win-win-win for all concerned, which is my favorite way to do business.
Right. It's the only way to do business.
Thank you.
It really is. So before we let you go, Claudia, before we let you go, one more time, give us your website.
It's doctorstelemed.org. And my Twitter handle is C as in cat, T as in Thomas, E-L-L-E, Z as in zebra, the number one, and that's it.
Okay.
Call me, email me.
Well, Claudia DeLise, thank you so much for being with us tonight on Shadow Politics. We've really gained a lot of insight into this, and we hope you come back in the future and let us know how it's going.
Perfect. I look forward to it.
Okay.
I look forward to it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. How refreshing is that? I love when people are socially conscious. It's just, you know, like I have a handyman who's a Vietnam War veteran. He's actually an immigrant from the UK. And he has prostate issues, so he goes to the VA locally, but if he has to go into Los Angeles, he takes the bus because he wants to alleviate his carbon footprint as much as he can.
Well,
I mean, talk about, you know, walk the walk.
Yeah, and you know, one of the first things I learned in business, Maria, is that you have to have something in it for everybody to be successful. You know, you kept on bringing this up that it was a win-win-win. Well, that's really how successful businesses work. Because, you know, the first thing I had a business partner early on, and one of the first things he taught me is, if there's not enough money in it for everybody, if there's not an interest in it for anybody, you shouldn't pursue it. For everybody, you shouldn't pursue it. We used a lot of subcontractors and other people, and that was a model that served me well. You know, make sure don't worry about the nickels and dimes. Make sure that there's something in it for everybody, because then everybody has a reason to participate. And that's why our democracy and capitalism work so well, because people get to pursue their interest in it.
But it's so funny, because there's still such greed out there. You know, Bernie Madoff aside, even these corporations with their huge, huge profits. And I don't begrudge, because if they put in, you know, all that time for their research and development, they, like the pharmaceutical companies, I get it why they're doing it. But remember the EpiPen debacle last year?
Yeah.
I have an EpiPen, so I'm one of those. And I always wondered why we had to buy two. You know, I only got a prescription for one. Well, now I know, because they doubled their profits.
Yeah. Well, and you know, that's the thing. I think that And this is what we see in leadership all the time, is that people lose sight of what they're doing. You know, they lose sight of the whole picture and they focus on one small aspect of it. And if you're in the marketing department of a pharmaceutical company, that's what you care about. You care about marketing it as efficiently as you can. And the accounting department wants to make the most money. So somebody has to take responsibility at the top of these corporations for providing the overall picture and providing a culture that, you know, engenders being community oriented, worrying about your carbon footprint, worrying about the rest of society. And I think that has to come from the top.
And also, there are companies where they have set up foundations that's all they do is they are funded or funneled money. I don't know from the parent company how. It sounds like grants kind of. But then that foundation that they established gives to, you know, takes grant requests in, under consideration and redevelopment and whatever their cause is. I'm in Southern California, and we've got this giant here called Amgen, and they employ, I think they're the largest employer in our area, and they have a foundation, and they do all good things around the world. It's really touching what they do, and you wouldn't think that about a corporation. You know, all we hear is the avarice and the greed, and here they are quietly doing this. I didn't know about it until I would say the last 5 or 6 years, and they've been around for decades.
Well, yeah, there are, you know, there are many examples of that, and you know, one of my favorite is we have a local guy. He was the guy that invented Under Armour. He went to my University of Maryland, and he's still locally, still, I believe, in Baltimore is where the whole operation is. And he gives millions of dollars to the high school in Washington, D.C. that he went to. He gives millions of dollars to the university. They provide all the uniforms for free for all the football team, the soccer team, the lacrosse team. I mean, he's really involved in the community and really involved in taking a lot of his profits and making sure they go back into the community. And then, you know, look at Bill Gates. Look at
yes, they're the best example.
Yeah, or the Oracle of Omaha. This is a man that started making money when he was a teenager. They're all giving their money to good causes. So, yeah, they're shining examples of what we need to do.
Well, and to piggyback on your Under Armour story, when I was with the American Red Cross, I got deployed to Mississippi for hurricane or tornado relief. And it just cut this huge swath through Tuscaloosa. So that would be Alabama, right?
Right, Alabama. Right.
Yes, it was Alabama. And we were going to give out clothing to people whose homes had been destroyed because they just had what they had on their backs and they came to our shelters. Under Armour flew a bucket load of paraphernalia, and then the NFL brought in 3 or 4 players and they just dispersed it to people as they needed. And I was so touched by that because these are perfect strangers, but disaster relief, you know, through no fault of their own. And there they are in partnership with the NFL. That just warmed my heart.
Well, and you know what? It's good business. I got to tell you, it's good business because it engenders a spirit in your company and a culture in your company that you're doing something positive in the world. Mm-hmm. And that's got to trickle down to your employees. You know, minimum wage, the whole concept of paying your employees came from Henry Ford because he was making cars and he said, I want the guys that work for me to be able to buy the cars they're building. I want them I want to not only build a company, I want to build a market for my product. And he was able to do both. So there we are. We're back to the win-win situation. When you make the world a better place, I think everybody wins. And given that, I want to segue into some of the most disturbing news of the week. I want to ask my friend Maria Sanchez, coolest woman on the planet, Harley driver, What do you think of pulling out of the Paris Climate Accord?
You know, I have to say I have reservations about it because there's a part of me that is a tree hugger and yeah. endangered species and all of that sort of thing. I don't know how much thought was given to it. I'm not quite sure what he thinks he's going to do with that stance. And I'm curious what you think, Michael.
Well, you know what? I am too. I'm somewhat of a tree hugger, but I don't know a lot about the particular court. I know it was voluntary, I feel like I know there's global warming out there. This guy mm-hmm. at the EPA just drives me nuts because look, it's 70 degrees. This is a true story. Earlier last month in Washington, D.C., it was 70 degrees one day and it snowed the next day. If you don't understand that there's climate change in the world, you're just not paying attention. So,
well, there was a story yesterday that there's an island in Alaska that it's shrinking and the village has to leave because they're running 9 to 20 feet a year is being gobbled up by the rising waters.
Yeah, and with that in mind, people should look and see how close major cities in America are to sea level to begin with. You know, it's not going to take much of a rise in sea level to put Manhattan underwater or to put maybe even Washington, D.C. I don't know. But there are a lot of cities that aren't that high. You know, we could turn into Holland overnight. You know, there'd be dams. What do they call them? Not dams, but yeah, dikes everywhere. You know, and so that's what bothers me most about it is that now we align ourselves with Syria and Nicaragua as the only countries in the world that are not part of this.
Yeah, bad bedfellows there.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of the way I feel about the United Nations. I know that a lot of people out there say the United Nations doesn't do anything. They're not worth the effort, blah, 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 blah. But I personally believe that the salvation of mankind is in coming together at some point. And the United Nations at least provides a vehicle where that may someday happen, even if it's not happening today. So I think it's an institution worth supporting. And I guess I feel that way about the climate change agreement. I feel like it's worth supporting. And for people that don't understand why China and some of the other countries that, you know, we've got people calling this a bad deal. China and India and some of the developing countries, well, they shouldn't be on the same schedule that we're on because we developed our industrial base over the last 100 years. We are one of the world's main polluters during that time, and we can't take economies that are still in the process of developing and dictate to them that they should be on the same basis. They should, you know, their carbon reduction should be the same as ours. That's just not fair. And I understand why they've negotiated terms which are more favorable to them. So I think that's an argument that really doesn't hold water. And so I'm concerned about this. And I think that I'm glad to see people standing up. And
Well, there is that, too. And I do appreciate that. Sometimes when I look at demonstrators, I think, oh, get a life. You know, yeah. I mean, come on. But I also secretly admire that they are that passionate. They're taking time out of their lives. Like the guest that we had on who went to the pipeline and stayed there. I mean, she's coming from Southern California, 2/3 of the way across the country for free because she's so sick of what's going on with the tribes. And she saw firsthand the atrocities that she shared with us, with the rubber bullets and all of people being pushed to the ground. And, you know, I mean, it was terrible what she told us.
Right. And you know what? Just I want to move on quickly to our very last story, but I do want to add that I read a story one time about a company that was burying nuclear waste instead of getting rid of it appropriately. And they were taken to court in Colorado, and people drove all the way across the state to be part of this grand jury for a year, once every 2 weeks or something. And in the end, the judge fined the company $1 million. And the jury withdrew its verdict. They were so mad. They said $1 million doesn't do anything to these people. We want to see them punished for what they did. And they withdrew their verdict. And it was the first time that anybody had withdrawn a verdict in Colorado. The article was about they didn't know what to do. But the court didn't know what to do about it. But these people were so passionate, they said, no, you know, we spent all this time and worked so hard, and $1 million doesn't mean anything to the people that did it because it's not coming out of their pocket. Mm-hmm. It's coming out of the pocket of corporations.
Well, and think about the land that it was put in and the leaching effects.
Right, and that's what they're saying.
Take generations to actually come to light. So, you know, slowly poisoning people over time.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
That was the whole point. Well, you know, the last thing that I think we need to talk about, first of all, I need to put in a plug because we care so much about statehood that this week, Kathleen Rice, Representative Kathleen Rice, a Democrat from New York, and Representative Brendan Boyle, a Democrat from Pennsylvania, both signed on to our statehood bill in Congress. So thank you, thank you, thank you. But last but not least, the terrible thing. That the bad news that came out of London yesterday, you know, how terrible is this? We need to stop this madness some way. We need to figure out a way to have the world come together and condemn this. And I would just add that the good news is that I just watched on the internet that Ariana Grande gave a concert today in Manchester. Everybody knows what happened 2 weeks ago in Manchester. Mm-hmm. She gave a concert with a bunch of other people, and there were thousands and thousands and thousands of people there. I think many more than the original concert, holding up signs that said, "We stand together."
Oh.
And that's what we need to do. We need to stand together against this.
I haven't heard about the three perpetrators. Have they identified? Were they radicalized? Were they immigrants? Were they
They haven't given the details yet. ISIS is claiming responsibility for this, but what they've said is that ISIS claims responsibility for anything. Mm. So they're not sure that that's the case, whether they were directly connected to ISIS, whether they were radicalized. You know, people are out on CNN and NBC, spreading rumors and stuff. And I think that stuff has to stop. I want to tell you, just it disturbs me this week that I got headlines on my phone, and one of them from CNN said that unemployment last month was the lowest it had been in 16 years, lowest unemployment. And then right under it was the Washington Post, and it says slow job growth, only 138,000 jobs created last month. So, you know, it depends on what channel you're tuning into.
Mm-hmm.
Is that good news or bad news?
Right.
Somebody's got to give the real news.
Right.
So we got to get that out there. And my heart, I see we've run out of time, and my heart goes out to the people in Manchester. So we're going to leave you with the song tonight that Ariana Grande ended her concert with. I have picked out a lovely song called Let There Be Peace on Earth. But,
oh, yes.
But this, I think, is more appropriate because it takes us back to a kinder and gentler time. And I think that was probably Grande's idea in doing it. So any last words, Maria?
Other than countdown to my bilateral hip replacement begins.
Yay! When is that?
It's Tuesday, June 20th.
Okay, man. As long as you can still get on the Harley, That's all that counts, right?
Swinging my leg over the bike is impossible at the moment. But
I know. But I
as the sales guy said to me, with legs like yours, you can ride any one of these bikes in the showroom because wow. I've got long legs. But, yeah, so I come by it. Honestly, it turns out the MRI, my physician, the surgeon, kept asking me about my birth. I said, what does this have to do with anything? And he said, you have a congenital defect in both of your hips that you have – your ball was never in the socket to begin with.
Wow.
So that and being an athlete and genetically predisposed, it was a perfect storm.
Well, you know, I told you a story about my brother where he cursed and screamed and said it was a terrible thing that he had the hip replacement. And then 2 weeks later, he called me and he said, I bought a Harley. Because he could swing his, because he came to my house and he couldn't swing his leg over my Harley. But then when he did, you know, he recovered from the hip replacement, he went out and bought a Harley because he could do it again. So we're going to get you back on the Harley. And so thank you again, Maria.
That's so sweet of you, Michael. Thank you.
And this is for all those people in Manchester, Judy Garland, Somewhere Over the Rainbow. We'll see you next week.
Give the people their right to vote.